The Vital Connection, a program helping connect Christ and your community. And now, here is your host, Dr. Bill Campbell.
Good morning and welcome to The Vital Connection. We are so glad you're with us this morning as we have in the studio Julie Honeycutt, and we're talking about how to reclaim health for the family. And so this has relevance for each of us because the family is the foundation of our society and of the church. Whether you're a Christian or not, it makes no difference. The topics we cover today, I think you'll find very relevant and important. Julie, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me again.
And you're no stranger, you say again, because we had her in, that was more than a year after you lost your daughter, Anna,
due to prescription
drug overdose, and you founded Anna's Hope, which has touched many, many lives. And now you've come into a new area, I want to say of ministry, even though this is not just for Christians, it's for everybody. But, well, the name, of course, is Mother Bear Community Action Network, or CAN. How did you find your way into this area of work, Julie?
Well, after we lost our daughter, Anna, and founded Anna's Hope, we were involved with a fund. We did start a fund at the Community Foundation of Henderson County. And the year that she died, the Community Foundation held an annual luncheon that they made reference to Anna's Hope being one of the first social networking funds that had been established to raise awareness about prescription drug abuse and addiction. And at that luncheon, Don and Elizabeth Cooper, who are the founders of Cooper Reese, which are mental health healing communities in Asheville as well as Mill Spring, were speaking. They were the featured speakers for the luncheon that day. And I listened to Elizabeth speak about the struggles that she had had with her daughter and how difficult it was for her to navigate the mental health system and just the healthcare system itself. Mm-hmm. And I cried the whole way through and afterwards went up and introduced myself to both she and Dawn. And then I saw her again, I guess, probably at a Power of the Purse luncheon almost a year later. And mm-hmm. we connected. And she asked me if I would be interested in taking a survey about mental health services overall. And I was unaware at the time that she was had some stirrings in her heart to start a organization called Mother Bear, because she had been called the Mother Bear. When you stand between your children, you know, you get in the way of a mother bear and her cub, you better, yes, you don't mess with that. So she received that name aptly because she fought for her daughter. And I met with her, and it just worked that in this beginnings of this Mother Bear CAN, Families for Mental Health, this organization that she was starting, she needed some extra help, and I knew that this was an avenue more for me to get involved and help others who had maybe experienced the type of mental health challenges and crisis that we had with Anna. So that's how I got involved.
Fantastic. Well, tell us a little about Mother Bear CAN. What's the main mission of it, and what's your role in it, Julie?
Well, right now, what we are, and we are still very young and very new, but we are a family support mental health network. We have a very strong online presence right now, and we are working strongly to support families in recovery. We believe strongly in hope and recovery. We want people to know that once you have a mental health diagnosis, that's not necessarily something that you need to live with for the rest of your life. Mm. You know, a diagnosis does not necessarily define you. That just because you have some sort of distress doesn't mean that you need a diagnosis to go with it. And so what we are trying to do is provide support for families through education, through hopefully very soon in the next month or two, we will be getting family support dens. Since we are Mother Bears, we'll be getting dens on the ground in our community.
I love it.
To have people access and be able to come and find that support that they need to get healing for their families. Because when one person suffers in a family, all family members suffer.
Absolutely. Let's talk about that suffering a little bit. And this is where we start connecting with our listeners. And if you're listening as we get further here and you want to weigh in with some of your own stories or questions or comments, you can call us at 693-WHKP. Julie, what are some of the mental health challenges that a family might face today?
Well, you know, mental health challenges are so, it's such a broad aspect of, I think we all experience mental health challenges in our lives. And I think what we're referring to when we speak that way, we're saying that it's an emotional distress that creates a change in our well-being. So okay. That's a challenge. And so many times, this can be very hard to pinpoint at first. And you'll see these things and you'll think maybe something is just a little amiss or awry. And then it can start to snowball if it's not directly addressed. And this happens so often in everyone's busy lives. I mean, you may see something going on in a family member and you may just write it off to a bad week or a bad day. Or it, actually sometimes emotional distress can be like in your face and a full-out, full-blown attack, and it can require hospitalization. So there's different types of emotional and mental health challenges. But what we are trying to do as Mother Bear is say that, you know, we need to be there for each other, and we need to provide support and understanding when these things are going on, and not just feel isolated and left out. Because when you leave these challenges unmet and when you leave them unaddressed, that's when they tend to snowball and become so much bigger than something that you can somehow deal with.
Mm.
And everyone gets lost.
Yeah. So as you talk about the stress, how do you compare that with disease? What's the difference?
Well, I think that's the problem, is so many, in our healthcare world, this is the way it is now. A diagnosis, a label is very, very important for insurance purposes, mm-hmm. as well as for, you know, people want a diagnosis. They want to know what's wrong with them. And sometimes they think that as soon as they have a diagnosis, well, then that's the reason I am the way I am. Or actually a diagnosis only really suits to help be prescribed something. Mm-hmm. You know, you want a magic bullet. You want a pill that's going to fix everything. You want to be given something instead of saying, this may be something I need to work through with my diet, mm-hmm. with my health. I maybe need to be exercising. I need to be doing self-care. There's a lot of things in addition to just that, you know, that medical miracle, if you will, mm-hmm. that medication that makes a difference in your life. It could be family therapy. It could be that you really need to sit down and look at your environmental factors around you and go, well, maybe this is causing this. Maybe I'm not getting enough sleep. Maybe I'm too involved in something that I need to scale back and pull back. There are just so many different things that you need to look at before you decide that you're going to be labeled as having something that's chronic and a disease. And it's not that you decide it, but there are so many extraneous factors that need to be considered before being mm-hmm. labeled.
Okay, we talk about being labeled. So you have a family that comes and says, we need some help here. You know, a mom says, one of my children, I don't know if she's bipolar, manic, depressive. You know, what's right. going on with her? We can't track it. She just gets anxious. She's high energy. Then she goes into this slump. And you, what you're saying to me is, instead of jumping for a diagnosis to solve things with medicine, you all like to look at the whole family and say, let's first relax a little bit here and think about the stress you guys are entering into. And are there some easy things we can do to maybe make things right? Is that what you're saying to me?
I think so. I think one of the biggest factors, or maybe just a very simple thought we need to look at, is just because you feel this way doesn't mean you always will.
Okay.
And a lot of times the problem with the diagnosis is it's almost like people sit back and go, oh, well, that's what I have. That's what I am.
Right.
That's what I will always be.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's very frightening. It's mm-hmm. very frightening, because all this does is create an ongoing condition that can actually create chronicity of the behavior itself. It doesn't give you that opportunity to do better and heal. And so here's the way I feel about a mother coming and saying these things and doesn't know if their daughter's bipolar or doesn't know if something's going on is that you really have to stay involved. And once you start navigating the mental health system, or once you start going into, let's say, a doctor's office, or you're looking for that diagnosis or such, the experience that I had, and I believe the experience that a lot of people had when we started seeing that angst that we saw in Anna, the somewhat depressive state that she was in, just some of the issues that we did start taking her to see a therapist for, is A, they began immediately medicating, which then totally altered the way she felt, whether she felt better or worse, and staying on those medications. And then the other component to that, even at Anna's young age of 15 and 16 when we were taking her, is we as parents became removed from the whole process. You know, she was no longer our child in a way. She was a patient, and we trusted the doctor, and the doctor became the one who knew all about our child, and all of a sudden we felt like we knew nothing about our child. And so there's this disconnect. And so what we want to do with Mother Bear Can is say, we want to keep you connected as families.
Excellent. I love that.
Yes.
Okay, back to the whole idea of a diagnosis. I imagine if someone is quick to get a diagnosis, not only does it tend to stick because a person thinks that's who I am, the family can help cement that idea because they've got their own system right there. They're talking with each other. Oh, that's her. That we expect that behavior from now on. Is that part of what happens on the negative side?
Right. Because what you have in psychiatry, you have the DSM, which is the Diagnostic Statistical Manual. What you do is you look down a whole row, a whole litany of certain behaviors, and if you exhibit 3, 4, 5 or more of these behaviors, then you get this diagnosis. So what parents, what family members can do is like, oh, well, she's this way, that way, or this way, so this means she has this, which is a very dangerous slippery slope.
Unfortunately. It's helpful for the psychiatrist in finding the right drugs to prescribe. But drugs aren't always the answer, and there are times when, if a family's healthy, they can help turn things around. So let's talk about the positive side. What can a family do to help that one? You mentioned staying connected with the mental health system. That's a really good tip. Are there other suggestions?
Well, I think other suggestion is to look at the factors, the triggers, everything that's going on in your own home. I think it's easier said than done, and I have to be just honest there because obviously, you know, when we were dealing with our issues with Anna and hoping that it was only teen angst and it was normal, we were looking at behaviors of our older daughter who had gone through the teenage years and thinking, oh, well, that's a lot like our older daughter, or, well, our older son and daughter didn't experience this, so why should Anna? And not seeing her as an individual package, but so we fell short there, I think, in seeing exactly what was going on with her. But to be fair to all families, it's hard when you are raising a family, and we had we do have a family of 4 children, to have a younger child, to be working, to have two, you know, to have very busy lives, and your life all of a sudden needs to stand still for one family member. So the struggle becomes, how much attention, how much time can you invest and involve with this family member before it starts bankrupting physically, mentally, and financially the rest of your family? So what we're saying is that we need to be there to provide a support network, because families sometimes cannot provide that support just because of the day-to-day and the busyness of their lives alone and their own struggles that they're going through.
Yeah. Julie, how long have you been with Mother Bear Can?
It was a year ago, February 1st, so just a year
month. It's pretty new for
it's
you, but you've
new.
Got a lifetime of experience in raising children and having the trauma to really talk to us about this. But are there, I know you have to be confidential, but in a generic way, are there stories, you know, experiences you've had where you've seen this played out, where Mother Bear Can has really helped a family to calm down, settle down, and start solving some of its own internal problems, and then creating a support around that person who has perhaps a borderline personality situation or an actual mental illness?
Well, we certainly are reaching out and becoming a support network for families. And we certainly have families who are encompassed in our dens, if you will, who are reaching out to us for information and support. Right now, we've helped them with referrals. We've certainly helped, you know, talk them down off the ledge of just feeling like they can't deal with their family members anymore. Letting them know, first and foremost, that they are not alone. There are so many families out there. As a matter of fact, the statistics show that 1 in 4 families experience mental health challenges.
Wow.
So basically, that's almost every single family is going to have some family member who experiences a challenge.
Yeah, incredible. 1 in 4.
Right.
And that is that statistic will at some point in the life of the family, or more like right now today, 1 in 4. Do you know?
You mean over the lifetime of the family?
Yeah,
I would think it's over the lifetime.
Over the lifetime.
Of the family.
Okay.
Because what you find is that most people who experience these challenges, it really happens right around, you know, many times adult onset, early teenage years.
Mm-hmm.
I was reading a story on ABC News this morning that was just very sobering about how the mental health care crisis is just bankrupting the lives of this Nebraska family.
Mm-hmm.
Their daughter is 16. By the time she was 5 years old, she had been diagnosed with Tourette syndrome and some other very crippling mental health issues. And they said in this article that mental health disorders are the primary cause of all hospitalization in teens, and that half of all lifetime cases of those who have chronic mental health disabling challenges begin by age 14.
Half of them.
Half
wow.
of them, yes. So that is very sobering.
Yeah.
I mean, the groundwork has to be laid very, very early on to try to deal and battle, A, these diagnoses, and to somehow stem the tide from them, you know, becoming present at all.
Mm-hmm. So one thing you guys probably do, Mother Bear Can, you probably encourage families when they see youngsters displaying abnormal behavior to try to get help right away. Don't sit on it. Get them while they're struggling at a younger age when... Is that right? You're kind of...
Well, what do you mean by get help?
Well, I mean, for example, it may be going to a counselor...
Right.
A psychologist, a psychiatrist.
Right.
Or, I don't know, maybe getting into a support group or just as a family.
Absolutely.
Taking the whole thing more seriously.
And it may be looking into your refrigerator, too, and taking all the refined and processed
there you go.
Sugars
yeah.
and foods out. It's simple as that.
Uh-huh.
Our youngest son is a senior in college right now, and I got he sent me an article. He reads a lot about prescription drug abuse. He reads a lot about labeling, and I'm very proud of the way he... he looks at this, especially after losing his sister, and he was definitely closer to Anna than our older mm-hmm. two were. It was just the way, you know, the birth order in the family. And,
right.
and so the loss of Anna was, you know, he's dealt with his grief in his own way. And sometimes we still worry about our children, how they're just dealing with their grief because it's mm-hmm. still fresh and new, and we know that they have challenges with that. But he sent me an article about ADHD and about Adderall and Ritalin, the drugs that are being used, and how many college-age students abuse it.
Mm-hmm.
And we just had a wonderful little texting conversation about how what a little rascal he was as the baby of the family.
Huh.
And how many days he got sent home with notes as a child. And I can remember one note he got sent home with one day that he had written 100 times, "I will not burp in my friends' faces." and to really think about it, there are many families and many children that would have been put on Ritalin by the age Mark was at 6 or 7 for his silly and obnoxious behavior. But and he said I was a perfect candidate to be put on it, and I'm glad you guys never put me on drugs. So
there's a lot to that. If you, listeners, again, I encourage you, if you have a story you want to share, feel free to call in 693-WHKP. But think of the number of kids now who are labeled with ADHD and put on Ritalin or other drugs in school, and many of them perhaps prematurely.
Right.
And then, as you say, it can carry right into college, become something they kind of depend on or get a hold of.
And let me say the reason it carries on into college is because if what we're teaching our children at a very early age is that a pill will take care of any problem you have, then they're going to be relying on some sort of medication or pills the rest of their lives to take care of any type of behaviors that they have.
Hmm. Well stated. So prescription drugs, that's part of the nightmare that you all experience as a family, and it's just such a huge crisis in our country. Drugs that are so accessible, they become an easy way out of the pain, and yet in the end they can cause more pain in our lives and a breakdown of everything important. Do you all deal with that, Mother Bear Can? Do you sometimes find yourselves challenging a family, hey, you all are relying on these drugs too much?
Well, we personally don't challenge them, but we do actually, we're part of a foundation, and we're part of the, actually Mother Bear Can is a fund of the Foundation for Excellence in Mental Health Care, and that is a larger fund of scientific and funds that have come together to promote excellence in mental health care. It was actually started after reading a book by Robert Whitaker called The Anatomy of an Epidemic, which actually exposes the history of psychotropic drugs in America, and that actually we're not getting better, we're getting worse. And there's more chronicity over long-term uses of these drugs.
Okay, what's chronicity?
Well, it's chronic.
Okay.
You know,
alrighty.
It's bad. It's not acute. Just
or chronic
just
cases.
A short case.
Right.
It's, you know, and so what happens is we're not getting better. And if you look at our, at the way we have progressed over diagnoses and all these drugs that have come on the markets in the last 30 years, these drugs were supposed to help keep help people get better. But if you look at our statistics, we're getting worse as a nation, and there's more sickness and more chronicity.
You know, as you think about the lack of funding for the mental health profession today, right here in our town, it's hard for the society around us to take care of those who are maybe out in the street because of mental health issues.
Right.
The funding for special homes and things is depleted. The family's understanding and support is needed more than ever, isn't it?
Right, and community.
I mean, so many
people don't have a very strong family network, and that's part of our problem, too, is our families are broken. I mean, they are broken.
Yeah.
And so we have to rise up as communities, as churches, as whatever we can to provide that network of support to be there. Because so many times, you know, family has been defined so differently now. And, you know, a support group can become a family to someone. Actually,
right.
It can become their only lifeline.
Yeah.
And I know that when I felt like I was going through just insanity, trying to figure out where my boundaries were with Anna, it wasn't until I joined a support group that I feel like I could actually breathe or sleep at night. So it's amazing where you find the, you know, the nurturing that you need. And that's what we want to do, is we want to nurture families. We want to help them, especially in times of crisis, and help them realize they've got to help self-care, and they have to set those healthy boundaries. And sometimes it's as simple as pulling you out of yourself and just saying something very simple to someone to let them realize, you know, I've got to be in good condition to handle this crisis, or else, you know, we really do fall apart. It's just simple sometimes, just to support someone, just to listen, just to care, just to offer a hand of encouragement.
Yeah. So important. So what we're saying, and I think we're all seeing this, is that as a family is coming apart at the seams, society's only becoming weaker, and the problems are compounded.
Right.
People don't have the support, and worse than that, they grow up in a dysfunctional setting, and it sets them off on the wrong track. And many find themselves settling behind bars. And
exactly.
That's not usually a good place to, or on the street, not another good place to deal with mental health challenges. So what steps can a family take?
Well, I believe that one of the biggest things they can do is to find family support, because actually statistics show that there are 75% less of a relapse in an individual, 75% less when families are involved in someone's recovery. That is staggering. Now, if you expect a person to go out there and get better on their own, their relapse rate is much greater. Falling into another mental health challenge or crisis. And there is very much a lot of dual diagnosis with this. They're going to self-medicate, which leads to addiction. You know, a drug will speak much more strongly to you when you are alone than if you are with someone who is supporting you and encouraging you not to go there.
Well stated. That's astonishing. That the
it is astonishing.
The rate of... We could turn around and say it positively, that the rate of recovery from an addiction or something else that affects our mental health can increase dramatically. It sounds like, you know, 75%
exactly
increase. out of 100%. I don't know how to put that into statistical terms. The point being,
it's big.
Having a family is a good thing.
Yes.
And making a family, as you say, in the community, in your church, in any network you can find, just as a group took care of you through your time of crisis. You had a support group. Was that in the community, in the church?
That was in my community.
Okay.
It was.
Yeah.
And at the time, I guess we weren't as connected to our church as we should have been. I'm sure there would have been hope and understanding there as well. But we were involved, or I very much more. I mean, Don was involved as well. But it was that support of people who understood the experience that I was going through, that they could relate to what I was going through, and they could tell me I wasn't crazy. Because they were experiencing it as well. So that's what we want, is we want people to understand that we have lived experience. We believe in providing hope and support because we know that we can get better, that our families can heal.
Fantastic. Okay, listeners, we're taking just a one-minute break. Hold on, we'll be right back.
Visit us online at thevitalconnection.org to comment on this program, to listen to other shows, and to see what is coming in the days ahead. Consider giving to help us reach others around the world. Again, our address is thevitalconnection.org.
Welcome back to The Vital Connection. We're glad you are with us this morning. And we have Julie Honeycutt with us. She's with an organization called Mother Bear Community Action Network. And she's been with them just over a year, but she's got a long history of dealing with, let's say, bringing good health into families. And she's got her own personal experience. Many of you know about Anna's Hope that she and her husband Don set up with the loss of their precious daughter. And she has a passion to help families be healthy. And so we're talking about mental health. That's the whole thing that Mother Bear can is all about. And again, if you like to call in, I know some people don't want to just share their stuff, but it may help someone else if you want to call in and say, you know, this is something I've gone through, or my family's gone through, or this is a question I have for Julie. The number here again is 693-WHKP. So Julie, what, as we talk about mental illness, what, let's say, is the most common thing? Is there something more common than others that you tend to see coming toward the Mother Bear Network?
Well, I think a lot of people are diagnosed bipolar.
Okay.
I'm very new to the psychiatric labeling. We do see a lot of people that are depressed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, depression is considered definitely...
I think that's the number one mental illness.
Right.
In the West right now, according to our labels.
It just blows my mind that it's considered a mental illness or a disease.
Uh-huh.
Because I think we all can have some sort of depression.
That's right.
At some time. I mean, the fact that the DSM, once again, the Diagnostic Statistical Manual, is wanting to pathologize grief.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I have a mental illness, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Because that grief affects you, your normal living, and yet... part of normal living is to go through that?
I mean, grief would not happen. It's a natural response to losing something you love. If we couldn't love, we wouldn't have grief. So how is that diagnosed a mental illness?
Yeah.
Basically, what it's trying to say by being able to pathologize grief is saying, well, if you're not better, if you're not over your grief within 2 weeks, I mean, 2 weeks of losing someone, then we can medicate you. Then you need medication, and that's not true.
This is not to knock the mental health profession, because there's much wisdom there through much experience. But in general, as our listeners, everyone goes through grief. We all have losses in our lives, and sometimes, in fact, it's quite normal if it's heavy grief. It leads to a period of depression.
Right.
And when you lose a child, as you did, when you lose a spouse, when you lose something very significant, your grief may go on. It may still be a normal grief and go on for a year and a half to 5 years. I mean, when people lose a spouse, they just carry it with them.
I don't think you ever get over grief.
You never really get over it.
You never, and you shouldn't. I mean, it's just a natural response to remembering how much you love someone and how much you miss someone. And, you know, not that my 85-year-old mother hasn't had experienced loss in her lifetime. I mean, she lost her own grandchild, but... Mm. She lost her little puppy that she'd had for 15 years last summer. Mm. And she came to me one day just crying and said, I really, truly, truly know just how you feel now, losing Anna.
Wow.
And I'm thinking, Mom, no, you don't.
No, you don't have a clue.
And it's so funny that it would bring something as close as this little dog that she absolutely just couldn't imagine losing. But that's grief.
But, yeah, the pets become like our children.
They do become like our children, especially the older we get, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, I think this is a very important topic. You're right, it's not always diagnosed as a mental illness, but depression,
mm-hmm.
I've read, is the number one thing affecting the mental health of people in America.
Right.
And so let's stay on this topic for a few minutes. You've certainly been through a lot of it. I confess I've been through a good bit of it myself. I lost a lot of precious people to me, two brothers just in the last few years, and one was a young brother, and one my older. So the guys are all gone in my family. I've got some wonderful sisters, praise God. You know, we always have something, someone that cares for us, but sometimes it's hard to see it when you're really going through grieving. So let's talk about, from your experience and also things that may be taught through Mother Bear Can, what do you suggest for people who are in the thick of grief and think, there's no way out of this? Maybe depression even.
Yeah. Boy, that really hits home. I think making sure that you don't isolate yourself. Making sure that you realize that so many people have experienced that same walk you're going through.
Mm.
It's very important to get support. It's very important to stay connected. I find myself, if it's been one too many gray days because the sun's not out, I can start feeling really down.
Yeah.
And I have to make a really concerted effort to get up, get myself exercising, get out, eat right, connect with other people. It's easy to go down that hole. It's mm-hmm. easy to be alone and isolate yourself and fall into your own sorrows.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we have to realize that we do live in this broken world, and we have to get out there. And I find sometimes that connecting to others, especially in my own grief and share my grief, helps me get out of it and helps me help others.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can help others through your experience, that's
excellent.
Very healing.
Absolutely. It's one of the best things we can do.
Right.
Absolutely. You know, what makes it easier for me than the rest of my siblings is we've lost some of our own precious brothers. As a pastor, I'm constantly helping others through their grief. And so it's easier for me. Like you said, when you help someone else, it's absolutely, again, essential to your own healing.
Right.
And so if you're listening to us now and you're finding yourself in depression, do what you can to get out.
Right.
And go serve. Maybe one of our local agencies. We have a guest who's called in. Hello?
Yes.
And your name, please?
My name is Elizabeth Reese Cooper.
Oh, wonderful, Elizabeth. You are the founder.
Yes.
You're the founder of Mother Bear, and we thank you for calling in. Elizabeth, we would just love to hear from you if you have a few minutes. Maybe a little bit of your own story. How was it that you founded this, and tell us what happened in your life.
Well, I'm sort of what you call the accidental mental health advocate. That was never what I had in mind to do.
Mm.
And when my daughter started showing symptoms of mental health issues when she was about 18 years old,
mm-hmm.
it kind of thrust me into it. And spent 10 years in what I call an unmanaged care or mismanaged care.
Mm.
And which led to my pulling my hands up one day when my husband said, I can't take this anymore. Let's start a place where people can truly heal.
Mm.
And that became the formation of Cooperies in Mill Spring. And subsequently, we opened a campus in Munford.
Okay.
It's a place where we don't ask what people's diagnoses are, but what's your dream and how can we help to achieve it? We focus on health and wellness. versus illness and disease. And people truly get better.
So do they live on site? Do they come and reside there?
Yeah, it's a residential program, and people and during the Avatar residents stay for about 6 to 8 months. Mm-hmm. And then the transition into our community program, which so right now is about a dozen homes in Asheville and the Mill Spring Tryon area.
Mm-hmm.
for a transitional period.
Mm-hmm.
To kind of, because if you leave Cooper Reef where meals are provided 3 times a day, and then now you go in on your own and you have to take care of everything, just like going off the deep end or the high jump off the swimming pool, you know, and it's not easy. So this is we call it it's a gradual transition back to life and back to independence. And it's just amazing. Just little things when people sit down for dinner the first day they're with us, and the conversation is, should we play basketball tonight or watch a movie? And the new person looks like this, that they're talking like normal people. They're not talking illness. They're not talking medication or hospital. They're talking like normal people.
Excellent.
And that alone takes the anxiety level from a 10 down to a 3.
It's almost like you provided a healthy family environment.
Yeah.
For those who don't have it.
We do, and I was married. 25% of our staff live there, and many of them live there with families and children. It's normalized.
Mm-hmm.
And, but I saw how our family suffered over the years, and we have family education, and we have twice a year we sponsor a 3 or 4 day weekend for our families to come and learn about, to learn about Kupuis and our philosophy to healing. And I see the change that creates, and then I also start thinking about, you know, in 10 years we've served 650 families.
Wow.
There's 60 million families out there. God knows how many families out there that suffer in silence. I did it myself for 10 years.
So
that's where the formation of the Mother Bear came in, because I want to take all what I've learned in the past 10 years at Cooper Reef and with our amazing staff. I now want to take that to all the families.
Excellent.
Because research at the University of Kansas, research showed that the relapse rate can be reduced up to 75% if families are informed, if families are educated, families can be supportive, and families know what to do.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned the 4 day weekend. Is that something that anyone can sign up for?
No, it's just for our families, for our current families.
Okay.
But we often, you know, invite interested local people to participate. And if you would like to come and participate, I would invite you as my guest.
Okay. Well, what if, Elizabeth, if somebody says, look, we've got a mental health issue in our family.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know where to begin. What should they do?
Well, the Mother Bear Family Network is a good way to start. We're still pretty young, and we have our we're in a process of putting together a resource list, and we do it by asking people on our website, on Facebook, and wherever we go, who is a good resource in your community, which psychiatrist can we recommend, psychologist, family network, is there a clubhouse in your area, and we're working on compiling that list.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing we're trying to do is set up what we call family dens.
Okay.
And we had some pilot dens going in Asheville and Hendersonville last year.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the year where we're going to try and get a format in place so we can start literally franchising that throughout the country. So it's a place where people can come together for support, for education, network, socialize. I'll tell you, when someone in your family has a mental health diagnosis, it affects everyone. And you become very lonely, ostracized, financially broke. You know, It's not some. We talk about planning for college. We talk about planning for the future. We never talk about planning for when somebody gets ill.
Right.
And especially with mental health. Physical health, people say, oh, I'm sorry, what can I do to help? Mental health, ew.
Mm.
It's scary. We don't know what to do. Your family member is being irrational.
Mm-hmm.
And so what do they do? It's like when you put two magnets together the opposite way. You know how the poles just, you cannot, that's what happens.
Right, right.
In mental health. I saw myself, my friends just, they ran. And I wasn't, because I wasn't fun anymore. My family wasn't fun, and I couldn't afford to do anything but take care of my family.
So if someone's listening now and they want to be part of one of these dens to get plugged in or maybe even just directly come visit the Cooper Reese Healing Community, should they Google Cooper Reese?
Yeah, if you Google Cooper Reese, it's CooperReese.org
Okay.
And our website, the phone, they could also call in and ask to come for a visit. The phone number in Mill Spring is 828-894-5557. And our Asheville campus is 828-285-8887.
Okay.
And it's the same website. And if a family member would be interested in Mother Bear, our website is motherbearcan.org.
Okay. Excellent.
And then they can also send it to either one. They can send it to info@cooperreese.org or info@motherbear, and we will respond right away.
Okay, Elizabeth, thank you. For those listening, this is Elizabeth Reese Cooper. She's the founder of Mother Bear Community Action Network. Thank you so much, Elizabeth.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for asking me to join you.
Okay, and have a great day, and I hope many do connect with you and with this wonderful opportunity to help our families be healthy.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. We have with us in the studio Julie Honeycutt. And you're the Community and Development Director. Is that right? That's your title?
That's correct.
So basically, you're doing what you did years ago for Habitat.
Yeah.
And you are very good at it, Julie. You are one of the best public relations persons I've ever met, really. And so you mentioned a big internet presence.
Yes.
And Elizabeth just mentioned how, you know, that the goal is to spread these dens, these support groups around the country. But right now, the internet, is it making much of a connection in other states outside North Carolina?
Absolutely. It's actually in other countries as well.
Wow.
What we've done is we've had an online pilot family education course, and we have found a lot of positive feedback from there that you can really, you know, you can get in and relate to people online almost as well as you can in a room sometimes. If that's all you have, that's all you have.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives you that a little bit of anonymity, I guess, if you will. You can sit there in your pajamas, of course, and read and answer questions as need be, and you can feel connected to the people that you're talking to at the same time, but not have to be totally out there, or, you know, not get up, get dressed, go somewhere, and be present.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly we want that, and that's why we're going to start the family dens. We'll have the dens in Asheville. We're working with the All Souls Counseling Center there,
mm-hmm.
as well as here in Hendersonville. Right now I'm speaking with them and at Blue Ridge Community Health Services.
Mm-hmm.
Anna's Hope a few years ago was able to give a donation to help with the behavioral health wing that was started at the Blue Ridge Community Health Services. And so we have a really healthy connection with them. Since they have that behavioral health wing, the family dens would just be a great source for them. And we can use many of the families as feeders to come into the dens who may need support and help. So we're just trying to place ourselves where we would be most effective and helpful for families with those in mental health crises.
Excellent. We have all kinds of listeners, no doubt. Some are dealing with issues in their own families. Some personally are struggling.
Right.
Maybe with a mental health concern, and maybe it wouldn't be labeled that way for them.
Right.
They're just struggling to get through life right now.
Right. I saw something the other day that was, it made an impact on me. You know, you see all these cute little things and these cute little things on Facebook, and you see these motivational sayings on Facebook, and some of them are really empowering, and some of them are really silly. And I saw one of them that said, you know, some of us are just trying to make it through the day.
Yeah.
And I felt so connected to that, because I don't think people realize how many of us out there are just on the precipice of just giving up and feeling like there is no hope. And hope is such a strong word. And whether you believe it in a faith-based hope or just a hope that there's something better out there, be aware. Just be aware that there is hope out there.
Mm-hmm.
And be encouraged by other people's stories. And we encourage people to share their recovery journeys with us, because there are so many people out there who do get better.
Mm-hmm.
They don't get worse. They get better.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we need to hear those stories. We need to hear the good and not always the depressing, the bad. I mean, all you have to do is turn on the TV. You can be depressed very quickly.
Right.
Or
unfortunately.
You know, unfortunately.
The news doesn't often have much good news.
There's not a lot of hope.
Yeah.
And so we want to support that healing process. We don't want to exacerbate the distress you're in. Mm-hmm. And so I think we all need to get out there. We also need to, for ourselves, we need to set those healthy boundaries. You know, you were talking about how you, as a pastor, and myself, with lived experience, we go out and we nurture, or we minister, or we help those who are suffering, because we've got that lived experience. But I know that there's a point in my day, many, many days, where I have to set a boundary. And I have to say, that's it. I can't deal anymore. I cannot read this email.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot talk to another person. They'll have to wait till tomorrow.
If you don't protect yourself, you'll help no one else.
Right. You become useless.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what we've forgotten in this busy, ridiculous world we live in of just instant gratification, instant message, instant everything that we need to see at one time, is we forget about self-care.
And healing doesn't come in an instant.
It doesn't.
No.
And it is a process, and it's a journey. And you're going to have a lot of scabs that get picked, and you're going to hit them again, and they're going to come wide open.
Yeah.
And they may hit you at the worst time possible. I mean,
right.
I can just have an outpouring of tears at the most inopportune times sometimes. But, you know, all you need to have is someone around you to go, it's okay. It's all right. You know, it may be silly at the checkout line in the grocery store, and I'm handing over my debit card to somebody, and I just start crying. You know, maybe I saw something that was a trigger, or maybe, you know, it's just something floods into your memories. We're human. It's okay. It's part of our human experience.
Hmm. I'd like to say a word as we speak about hope, and this is from the perspective of the Vital Connection, where our byline is connecting Christ with the community.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Bible, he's called our hope.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the idea there, and you may react to this, and I know Mother Bear Can is a network that's not based on religious principles. It's based on bringing hope in general, but this is a specific kind of hope. Now, there are people who have grandiose delusions and other things where religion seems to actually compound their mental health illness.
Correct.
But that's not what I'm talking about. It's
right.
this person named Jesus Christ, who is not about you being God, but about helping you in your trials.
Mm-hmm.
He's not one to give you delusions, but actually to give you clarity of mind and freedom. And I've seen this happen a lot. When we talk about the grace of God through Jesus Christ, and we say that God really loves you, Christ died on that cross and put your sins right there. He hung them on the cross. He took the punishment that you could have had. You know, when someone believes in God, they read in the Bible about a God who is just and holy and righteous. And any punishment we deserve for anything we've done wrong, Christ took it all on himself. That's freeing.
Mm-hmm.
That's incredibly freeing. And so there are a lot of churches and Christian ministries that have found great help to individuals and families on the mental health side, simply by preaching that and proclaiming that hope, or living it out, and just sometimes, just like you said, just smiling and showing someone they're important. Sometimes someone who has a hope in their heart has the strength to get out and help someone else who doesn't have much hope. So that's just something I add related to this program, The Vital Connection. But, you know, the same principles work for Mother Birkin. It's hope, isn't it?
It is, and it's an element of extending grace to others, extending that arm of hope. It definitely is. It's about showing support and kindness and mercy.
Yeah. Well, we certainly have a great need for it. Julie, our time has gone very quickly, as I suspected it would. We've got just a few minutes left. What things would you like to see us talk about here? What have we missed in our program that people really need to hear about?
Well, I just believe that it's so important to remember that just because you do feel this way, just because maybe you do go and you're diagnosed with something, it doesn't mean that's who you are for the rest of your life. It doesn't mean that you will always be that way. I mean, you just spoke about extending that true hope, that element of grace. There's always opportunity for change. There's always opportunity for healing.
Mm-hmm.
There is no place too low that someone else hasn't already been. So I think that we need to just encourage one another, be there for one another, and need to know that resources like Mother Bear Can, that we are families that all want to support each other, that we are a family network,
mm-hmm.
and family being the operative word here.
Mm-hmm.
And whether that family is your family unit or community, whatever it is, just stay connected and be involved.
And I'd like to give this word, you know, as a pastor, and as I mentioned with the radio program, we think of Christ, this person. Even if you don't believe in him as who he claimed to be, the Son of God, look at his life as you read. If you take time out, just read the Gospels. Those are the stories of his life. You can pick any one of them. You see there a man who really cared for other people. And when he went out and walked the streets and healed and helped and listened and cared, he did so much of it that at one point the family said, "You're out of your mind. You know, come away from the crowds. You're going to go crazy. You don't have any," we'd put it this way in our society, "you don't have any borders in your life, you know."
Mm-hmm.
But he did get away. He'd withdraw to be in prayer and meditation. He'd go up on a mountainside. He'd leave the crowds quite often. So if you're listening now and you just have not gotten away from the rat race, from the pressures of your life, there is a way to do that, and it's very, very important. The God I believe in made the world, we're told, in 7 days or seven periods of time. But he rested on that seventh day, and he said, "Now I made you in my image, do the same." And so that whole principle, we've kind of lost it. It used to be we had these blue laws, and nobody worked on Sunday, and the whole society took a rest.
Right.
Now we don't know how to stop.
Right.
And I'm telling the listener, some of you are listening right now, you know this is true when I say it, you need to take a break.
Right.
I understand you need the money, and you think you can't get off the treadmill or everything will die. It's not true that you can't get off the treadmill. You need to take a break. Just set a better pace for yourself, and you'll do better in the long haul.
Right.
So
there's definitely more gears than overdrive.
Yeah.
Sometimes we need to put in initial, and sometimes we really need to park.
Well, dear friends, you've been listening to Julie Honeycutt. Julie, thank you for joining us today, and we greatly appreciate what you're doing. And Mother Birkin, and Elizabeth, if you're listening, Elizabeth, we thank you for what you've done in founding this network, and we pray all the blessings of God on this effort. Listeners, thank you for being with us. Be sure to join us next week as we have another exciting program on The Vital Connection.
Thank you for joining us for today's program. To be part of our online community, visit us at thevitalconnection.org. If you have comments or would like to make a contribution, our mailing address is Post Office Box 6007, Hendersonville, North Carolina, 28793. You have been listening to The Vital Connection.